Redbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota on Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit toyotaonnicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington, home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at lexusoflexington.com.
I always tell my students, follow your bliss.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Blissed the Podcast. I am your host, Patch Drury. We're going to try something a little different with this episode. Usually what we do is we interview people who are following their bliss and try to extrapolate lessons from their experience. I used to have another podcast, though, called God the Podcast, where I talked about transcendence. And sometimes as a part of that podcast, I would read mythological stories. And I had a listener of both podcasts reach out to me and say, hey, you should do the thing where you read the stories. I really liked that. And so we're going to try that today. Reading mythological stories on a podcast dedicated to following your bliss actually makes a lot of sense because mythological stories are ultimately about how we live our lives and how we make our way through this planet. And that relies heavily, I find, on knowing and following your bliss a lot of times. But specifically, we're going to read a specific story today. I've said specific twice there. It's the story of Percival, Sir Percival, from King Arthur's court, more correctly known as Parzival. And so he, whether you know it or not, is kind of the mascot of following your bliss. He, his story kind of very specifically relates to that whole process. And so we're going to read some bits of his story from a man who detailed his story, and I have trouble pronouncing his last name, but his first name is Wolfram. I should have really spent some time learning to better pronounce his last name, but I will make sure all of the, if you want to read this story for yourself, I will make sure all the information, pertinent information, is attached to this podcast somewhere. But without further ado, let's get into it. Here is the story of Sir Percival, more correctly known as Parzival. So, in the introduction to A Joseph Campbell Companion, Reflections on the Art of Living, let me see who wrote this introduction here. Someone known as DKO. I don't know who. Oh, Diane K. Osborne. She wrote this introduction, and she describes Sir Percival, Parzival, this way. He was not an angel or a saint, but a living, questing man of deeds. Gifted with the paired virtues of courage and compassion, to which was added loyalty, and it was through his steadfastness in these, not through supernatural grace, that he won at last the Grail. And so there's some important things pointed out there. First of all, it explains what are the traits you need to properly pursue and find your bliss. Now, the ones that Percival had naturally were courage and compassion. He was a brave person, but as you'll see in the story, the most important part of finding the Grail, or the most important quality he needed, was compassion. And I believe that is true for us as well. To truly find your bliss requires a certain amount of compassion. Now, Percival became one of King Arthur's knights, and that's when it was added to him, loyalty, as it said there in the introduction. But courage and compassion, I think, are the two things most important. Why courage? Because basically in life, we are presented with two options, safety or freedom. Safety means sitting tight, finding a good paying job, not taking any chances, staying on the right-hand path of society and culture. And that doesn't require bravery a lot of times. It's a safe place to be. But then the other option we have is freedom to do what we want to do, freedom not to be told how to live, freedom to follow the left-hand path of following your bliss. And so courage is needed for that. Courage is needed to say, you know what? I'm not going to know how well or how often my bills are going to be paid sometimes. I'm not going to know where the next thing is coming from, but I'm willing to chase my freedom, chase my bliss, and find those things out and sacrifice a little bit of safety. So that's why courage is important. Why compassion? Because ultimately, when you find your bliss, you have the option of keeping it to yourself and hoarding it. And there's actually a step in the monomyth called refusal of the return. Did you hear my dog bark there? You might hear a lot of that. Refusal of the return, where you have found the bliss, you have found the magic elixir, and then you've decided against sharing it with the world and have decided to keep it for yourself. So compassion isn't always needed to find your bliss, I guess I should say, but to properly use it, you need compassion. So once you've found it, you have to share it with the world. And we actually see Sir Percival doing this with the Grail. The Grail kind of, the Holy Grail, I'm sure you've heard of, kind of worked as a cornucopia of sorts. And so he used it that way after he found it. But anyway, so King Arthur stories. I grew up really into comics, really kind of into mythology at the time, but I never really got into King Arthur stuff. I always found it unappealing for some reason. And then lately, at least in the last 10 years, any movies that have been made about it have been terrible, including the most recent Guy Ritchie variation on the story. I did not think that was very good. But when I started studying Joseph Campbell and his works, I kind of was reintroduced to King Arthur stories, specifically the story of Sir Percival. I find it really hard to tell the stories of King Arthur without spending a lot of time on Sir Percival. You usually see a lot about King Arthur himself or Lancelot and Guinevere, but I really think Percival is the hero of those stories. And I told a story once at a storytelling night where I compared myself to Sir Percival, so clearly I find him a compelling hero. But the reason I compare him to myself is because he started out from a very naive place. He started out kind of not knowing the ways of the world. And there was a specific reason for that. His mother was named Herzeloid, which actually was my mom's name too, strangely enough. But Herzeloid, she fell in love with a knight, and that ended poorly, as knights' tales usually do. And so she, before that ended, though, she had a son, Percival, and she was so distraught by the way her love affair had ended with her knight lover that she wanted to keep Percival far away from knighthood and that sort of stuff. And so I'm going to read a little bit of Wolfram here and get you acquainted with that part of the story. Herzeloid was determined that her son know nothing of the chivalric ways of life, the cause of all her sorrows. Forsaking court life and its privileges, she retired deep into the forest. Parzival grew up in nature, loving the plants, the birds, and the animals. He was skilled in hunting with a javelin, and he knew nothing of the ways of life that his father had followed. Unstructured, he wondered about many things. He wondered about many things, including who or what is God. Well, holy crap, there, that's me right off. Not that my mom kept me from being a knight, but I grew up in a very Christian home. And I wouldn't say we were sheltered, but at the same time, Christianity kind of naturally builds into it a certain, a bubble of a kind. And you're told certain things are detrimental to you. And every way of life tells you certain things are detrimental, obviously. But Christianity kind of seeks to really protect young Christians from that. And so I relate to that in a lot of ways. There were some things about life that I never encountered, even up until I was in my 30s. And so, but the one thing that I did encounter and that Parzival has encountered is wondering, what is God? His wonderings were unstructured, so he kind of came to it kind of out of nowhere. He had nothing to base it on, whereas I was given an ideology and a worldview that I kind of based it on, but I stepped outside of that structure to ask questions eventually. And so in that sense, Sir Percival and I, we have that in common. So that may be, and I'm really not calling myself a hero. I'm not comparing myself to his heroic deeds, but I'm saying I think this is why his story has always appealed to me. So here in this story, in Sir Percival's story, we see the classic Oedipal mother. And that's not to say there was a romantic relationship between Sir Percival and his mother, but instead she kind of said to him, let me protect you, let me keep you to myself so that you don't have to deal with these terrible events and structures out in the world. You just stay at home and I'll protect you from those. But as we will see in the story, that wasn't good enough for Sir Percival. One day, some knights from Arthur's court came riding through the forest. Parzival at first thought they must be devils, so huge and threatening did they look. Then he took them for angels, due to the bright reflections on their armor. The knights so impressed the innocent boy that he soon lost interest in spearing deer. So here firsthand we see a prime example of how naive Parzival is, because the first time he sees knights, they are so alien and strange to him that he assumes they must be devils, and then eventually assumes they must be angels, and he just becomes fascinated with them. This does not make his mother happy. She's not into the idea of him being fascinated with knights, because she knows what happens next. He starts asking questions, he becomes even more interested in knights, and soon he believes he needs to leave the safety of his forest home and his mother's bosom and go out and try to become a knight himself. His mother doesn't actively try and stop him from doing this, but what she does do is she dresses him in really shabby clothes so that when he shows up at King Arthur's court to become a knight, everybody thinks he's some kind of court jester or some kind of country bumpkin. And she kind of gives him some advice that on one level is helpful and on another level kind of hinders his cause. One good piece of advice she did give him, though, was if he ever met someone who was older, who was you might consider an elder, then he should listen to them and take their advice, because there was going to be wisdom there. And how much better off would all of we be if we learn to, as individuals and as a culture, learn to listen to the people who have been through some shit and have something to teach us. So in that sense, she did give him a little bit of good advice. And then it becomes in handy because it'll bring us to our next reading. Basically, he's at a knightly event, knightly with a K, like some sort of gala event, and he's kind of making a jackass of himself because he doesn't know how to behave. And he meets someone named Gumamans, who gives him some advice. So let's read that part. Gumamans advised him never to lose his sense of shame, hold women in high esteem, always wash after jousting, show compassion for those who are needy and in distress, be they rich or poor, without discretion, and do not ask too many questions. Thus he acquired the rudiments of chivalric code and manners. So there you go. Good advice for all of us, I think. Never lose your sense of shame. I think that one's good. I think too much shame is really destructive, but also just being aware of yourself and having standards for your own behavior is probably a good idea. Treat women well. After jousting, take a bath. Anytime you've done something sweaty and gross, clean yourself up. Be compassionate to people, whether they're rich or poor. And this, as we've talked about, is really important to finding your bliss. So this is going to come in handy for him. But this next little bit of advice kind of undoes him a little bit. And that advice was, don't ask too many questions. And we will see that Sir Percival took that to heart. And he might have taken it a little too far to heart, because he let it override his compassion. And so that's compassion and curiosity, I feel, go hand in hand. And if you tamp down your curiosity too much, you will inevitably tamp down your compassion. And so, be probably the way to, kind of discern that advice properly is to say, be respectful, don't be nosy, but still be compassionate. So let's go to our next reading here. So basically what happens is with this advice in hand, a little bit better of a knight than he was before, Sir Percival goes off on a quest for the Holy Grail. And there's a point in the story, I don't have the reading for it, but basically all the knights, they're going out together to find the Grail. And they're like, you know, we can't go as a big group. That would be not cool. We need to go individually. We'll find it quicker if we go individually. So they all encounter this big giant forest. And instead of entering the dark forest by them or as a group, they each split up and they all enter the forest where they see fit. And the idea there is there's not one path for everybody. Everybody has their own path and you have to find your own path. And it would be easier, it would be less scary if you could bring a bunch of people with you or if you could just follow a preordained path. But the fact is you have to hack your own way into the dark woods of life. So anyway, Sir Percival finds the Grail eventually. Well, not right out. Let me back up a little bit. He finds an old man fishing on a lake, and he goes and he interacts with the old man. The old man takes him to a castle, and little does he know, this castle is called the Grail Castle. And there he's hanging out with all the people who live there. And this big procession comes through, and an important thing to point out that I've skipped over is this man fishing in the lake. He was deathly wounded. He was he had taken some damage in the crotch area in battle, and so he was in rough shape. And so he and this badly wounded fisherman, also known as the Fisher King, you probably heard that before, Robin Williams movie. They go back to the Grail Castle, and there's this big procession where the first thing is brought through is a lance dripping with blood, and everybody who's watching the procession, this makes them really sad. And this is a metaphor for their king's ruined crotch. I shouldn't have to go into too much detail as why a lance dripping with blood may make you think of a wounded crotch. But anyway, this is symbolic of that. The next thing that comes through is the Grail, which is a cup, which is a chalice. And so there is some strong genital imagery here, because the same way this lance would represent male genitalia, a cup can be seen as female genitalia. And the Holy Grail itself is often thought to refer to femininity, Mary Magdalene. And some people say that when the stories about the Grail are really stories about Mary Magdalene. So there's a lot of room to wonder and disagree and talk about that. But at any rate, we see these symbolic things coming through in this procession. And the second one is the Grail. And what happens is, it's a reading. Let me read it to you. The Grail served forth wondrous repast to all of them. Dishes warm and cold, new and old, a boundless feast to be consumed from the magic cornucopia. So we see here the Grail is basically a magic cornucopia. It issues forth food. It issues forth nourishment. And in that way, it is just like your bliss. When you find the thing that you love, that is your highest enthusiasm, that gives you life, it constantly feeds you. It renews you. And so in that way, the Grail truly is metaphoric and symbolic of finding the thing that you love, because it ultimately gives you life. And you can draw these comparisons even further back to the tree of life in the Garden of Eden. And we'll get into that another time. We won't get too deep into this one because you guys don't want to hear me ramble any more than I'm rambling. So Sir Percival joins all these people for this big feast. They have a great time. They go to bed that night. He wakes up the next morning and everybody's gone. Everybody has left this castle and he's all by himself. So he's confused. So he suits up in his armor and he leaves. And as he's leaving, he encounters, strangely enough, his cousin. And so he tells his cousin all about this weirdness that has just happened with the Fisher King and the castle and the Bleeding Lance and the Grail that comes through and how it makes all this food. And she is dubious. She does not believe him, but she also recognizes something very important in his story. So let's go to our next reading. There cannot have been such a place, or if there is, it cannot be found by seeking, though many try. Someone who is meant to find it will do so in an unwitting way. Such a place is Wild Mountain, the castle in the wilderness. You missed the greatest treasure in the world, she said, because you did not ask the question. For this you will be considered a dishonorable person and a man accursed. Okay, two important things to point out here. First of all is her description. First of all, she's dubious this place exists, and also she's like, well, if it exists, I don't think you found it. Because the thing about finding your bliss is that you can't really seek out to do it. You can't just decide, well, I'm going to go find my bliss and then find it. The way it works is you feel the need for it. You feel its call. I talk a lot on this podcast about the call to adventure. You find your bliss after you have been called to look for it. And so she's kind of saying, you don't find this just because you've decided to look for it. But then she goes on to point out to him, you were there, you saw the grail, but you missed out on its significance. You didn't realize what you were looking at because you didn't ask the question. And she doesn't even say what the question is. She just calls it the question and points out that he screwed up because he didn't ask it. And so he is left to wonder, how have I screwed up? What could I have done differently? What question was I supposed to ask? Our next reading takes us back to the Grail Castle and kind of just catches us up on it. So let's listen to that. At Wild Mountain, Amrafortas, who is the Grail King, the Fisher King, and the family of the Grail were still suffering their curious plight to be sustained by the Grail, but stranded in the wasteland surrounding the mountain, unable to leave or share the Grail with the world outside. Amrafortas was in pain. It was at its peak. And the wound stank to high heaven. The family used herbs and fragrant extracts to clear the air. They surrounded him with countless magical jewels, but this was not the magic he needed. All right, so this, something here they kind of point out is that this family is, they're living off of the Grail. They have realized its sustaining power, but they are stuck in this wasteland. And that kind of describes why most people who go to chase their bliss do it in the first place, because they look around and they see the world is a wasteland, that it's damaged and dark and needs to be fixed. And there's a thing that can fix it. And it points out that this family is unable to share the Grail with the world, because that would enliven this wasteland. And so and the king is still injured. His messed up groin is still really messed up. So messed up, in fact, that they point out, needlessly, I think, that it stinks to high heaven. That his groin is so messed up that it smells bad. And I think we can all easily figure that out, that, you know, if your groin is messed up, there's probably going to be some smells at some point. It's a part of the body that needs constant care and hygiene paid attention to. And so if you're not able to do that because it's been messed up in a battle, yeah, it's going to stink. But we just let us figure that out. You're going to tell us that. So anyway, they try to cover the smell and they try to tend to him with herbs and magic jewels. But it says this is not the magic he needed. And God, this is us in so many ways. We feel the call of our bliss. We realize something is not right in our lives, something that we lack real life. And so we try to cover it with other things. And this, I'm going to sound like a youth pastor here, but we try drugs and we try to drink and we get into relationships where we try to make the other person our lifeline. And even here's where I won't sound like a youth pastor is even religion, dead religion that doesn't try to connect you with yourself, religion that doesn't try to make you whole, but instead religion that reemphasizes how fractured you are. We think that's going to be the answer, and then we get into it, and it just makes us feel more fractured and more apart from God and the universe and the source that we all come from. And so much like us, they were trying to do the Grail's job for it, because the Grail was kind of operating not at its full capacity. It was feeding them, but it wasn't healing the Grail King the way it needed to. So let's go to our next reading. It finds Percival returning, and he is bringing the other knights with him. So he's realized he screwed up, and he's like, "All right, I'm going back, but I'm taking my boys. We're gonna get this Grail." And so he here's the next reading. Guided by Kundry, the knights arrived quite soon, and the king received them joyfully. Upon seeing his uncle, Percival asked the question, "Sire, what ails you?" The effect was immediate. Ramphortas began to feel on the mend. Immediately, the court set about to enthrone Percival as the king of the Grail. The hermit Trevisant marveled that Percival, in his innocent defiance, had wrung a concession from God. All right, so several things to touch on here. First, previously unmentioned by me, the Fisher King was Percival's uncle. I didn't really get into that because it's all confusing and kind of unnecessary to the greater story, I feel, at this point, or at least the part of the story I'm trying to highlight. So Percival goes back, and the first thing he does is he goes to the Fisher King and he says, "Hey, what's wrong with you?" And just by asking that simple question, by that simple act of compassion, the king starts to heal. And everybody in the castle goes nuts, and they take Sir Percival and they crown him as the next Grail King. And it says, there's a hermit there, I butchered his name, I know I've butchered a lot of the names on this, but he's astounded that Percival is, it says, what's the phrase here it used? Through innocent defiance was able to gain a concession from God. And so I think that's an important word, innocent defiance, because there is no guile in Percival. And to truly follow and chase your bliss, there is most likely no guile in you. You're not doing it to show up everybody else. You're not doing it to say, "Hey, look at me, I'm the best at this. I'm a millionaire, I'm all these things." Like, no, there's nothing wrong with being a millionaire. Get rich from your bliss. Hopefully you will. But if you do that just to show people up, then that's not innocent. That's kind of badly motivated. But Sir Percival wanted to do what was right. He wanted to be compassionate to this king. And so in doing that, he did something that was could be perceived as an act of rebellion, a rebellion against this advice of not to ask too many questions. And so he innocently did ask a question, and as a result, won the day. And so there will be a lot of people who, in pursuit of your bliss, will tell you, you're kind of breaking the rules a little bit. You're not doing what the church says. You're not doing what your boss says. Your parents would really like you to have a well-paying job that where they don't have to worry about you. So just get back in line. Stop asking questions about how life could be. Usually, if you're asking those questions, if you're pursuing your bliss, you're not motivated by anything bad. You're motivated by innocent compassion. And so when you let that guide you, you get closer to God. You accomplish his will and his feats and tasks that he has set aside for you. And so I think that's what's incredible about the Sir Percival story. I think that's what's incredible about following your bliss. I think that's what's incredible about most mythology in general, is it points you to being a better, truer version of yourself. And when you do that, you gain the Grail and you can use it to heal others. And what I didn't read here, but what goes on to happen is this wasteland that surrounds the Grail Castle is brought back to lush new life. And that's what, when we follow our bliss, that's what we have the potential to do, to bring the world around us back to life. And so I'm really, I speak high-mindedly about this stuff, but I think it's a high-minded topic. I believe in it wholeheartedly. I believe in it fully. I get questioned a lot about how much I believe it. And that's fine. I can take those questions because I really think this is essential. essential to us as a race and a people. I think it's encoded into who we are on a deep level. And I think some people have been talking about it for centuries. It took me a while to notice it and recognize it and get turned on by it. But now I am. So now I'm trying to talk about it as much as I can. So anyway, that's the story of Sir Percival. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope it was meaningful to you. If it wasn't, please leave me a message somewhere and be kind, but say, no, get back to the interviews. Didn't like that. Didn't care for it. Or if you loved it and you're like, hey, man, more of this, then this could become a regular thing on the podcast. I want to push the boundaries of what we do. I want to try new stuff. But all of it ultimately pointing to that if you can become the best version of yourself, then and take that with compassion out into the world, you will naturally bring other people up to being the best version of themselves. And then imagine a world where we are all the best version of ourselves. It's pretty incredible to think about. I am your host, Patch Drury. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week. All right, bye.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media. Find more about us at breadboxmedia.com.